Checking in again with Quincy City Council President, Councillor at Large Nina Liang, for an update on the latest full City Council meeting. Nina!
Hello!
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Joe?
Okay, thanks. We're nearing the end of the legislative session and still working remotely. I know that now were the emergency orders extended by the state to allow for remote meetings to continue? I know we talked about that last time.
Yes. So they're going to be extended through, I believe, next year. But, you know, we have been discussing going back in person pretty frequently and obviously just continuing to move it, you know, based off of folks' comfort levels. But I had, you know, a thought in my head that regardless of what happened with the order, you know, if we could, I'd prefer to meet back in person in September. And so that's still the goal right now is, you know, although the governor's order allows us to meet remotely and continue to do so, I think people are itching to be back in person. And, you know, right now the next question is how can we try to find a way to allow for remote participation if we are to meet in person? And then, you know, what are the logistics around that we'd have to explore?
Yes, that's unexplored territory that will present a whole list of challenges, I am sure, going forward, not only for City Council, but Zoning Board, License Board, Planning Board, all public meetings, I'm sure, not only in Quincy, but everywhere.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and you know what? It's never going to be perfect out of the gate, right? Remote meetings and when we were doing remote meetings were never perfect out of the gate. Although I will say that among, you know, all of the committee meetings and the council meetings that we held remotely, I think we only had one hiccup in the past 15 months where due to a bad internet connection, we all got removed from the meeting and then had to log back in. Honestly, though, if we're talking 15 months worth of committee meetings and council meetings, and that's the only hiccup we had, I honestly am really proud of my colleagues. You know, I think we did a good job so far, knock on wood. So.
Well, yeah, that is really a pretty good. I mean, even in-person meetings, there are microphone issues sometimes, you know, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, no, I'm really proud of them. I think we managed it well. So, I mean, you know, my point to that is that nothing is perfect out of the gate. You know, certainly to your point, right, if we're all exploring continuing remote options for participation, even if we're meeting in person again, what does that look like? You know, how do we coordinate with QATV to make sure that that's possible? And then just, yeah, figuring out what works, what doesn't work, right? And moving on from there, I can guarantee that the first, you know, two or three tries aren't going to go exactly how we want them to, but we're not going to know because like you said, it's uncharted territory, right? So until we give it a shot, we're not going to know what works and what doesn't work. But yeah, I'm excited, you know, with all the hiccups along the way, if we can find something in a system that works and then we can pass that along, you know, I think that'd be really helpful.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about last night. Are you still doing your COVID-19 heroes or?
We have not. We are deep into budget season. We are all budget all day, every day right now. So.
Gotcha. Okay. So what are the highlights from last night?
Yeah, so last night, as it was the last regularly scheduled council meeting in June before we had to pass the budget, you know, although some things have changed, I'm sure people have been following along, you know, have seen the budget hearings get rescheduled quite a number of times. But, you know, typically what happens is that right before the budget has to get approved at the end of the regularly scheduled council meetings in June, you have to approve some appropriations that get moved from one line item to another just to, you know, close out the books for the end of the year. So that's what a lot of last night consisted of, right? Was a lot of cleaning that up. And so we had quite a number of appropriations come in. I believe we had 7 or 8 of them where it was requests to move, you know, funding from this line item over to this one to cover some expenses. So we just reviewed what some of those were, what line items they were coming from, you know, who doesn't need some extra funding in that area, why wasn't it used here and it's appropriate over here instead. Again, this happens every year. It's that very typical end of year cleanup work that we do. This year, the only difference is that we're doing that pre-budget hearing versus post, right? Generally in the past, what happens is we have the budget hearings where the department heads come in front of us. We have an opportunity to ask questions. You know, we vote in finance committee on the budget and then we come to the regularly, you know, the regular council body, right? Not in committee, but the regular council body. And we vote on the budget there. And then we also have these appropriations requested as well. Whereas this time around, because the budget meetings kept getting punted, we had this conversation first, and then we're going to be discussing the budget. So it's actually really interesting for me, I think anyways, to be able to see, again, what line items those appropriations are coming out of, and then looking at what they're projecting they need for those line items next year, right? Let's see if they match up. Let's see how close they are to one another. it's tough too going into budget deliberations, right? Last year, or this last fiscal year anyways, right? It's completely upended. It's not your typical year. It's not the norm, right? It's not unlike when we had that big storm, in 2015?
Yep, it was.
In 2015, right? So looking at the snow and ice line items, right? That took us, I think, 3 years to recoup from that because again, it's not typical. You're not expecting it, right? So not unlike some of these events that occur sort of really randomly and sporadically, you know, we can look at these numbers coming into budget hearings and saying, okay, well, you had to move 100,000 from line A to line B, you know, this year's budget request, does that reflect that?
Right.
Because even if it doesn't, that could be okay, given what's happened this past year, right?
Oh, right. So, that could have been just a one-time expense that was incurred because of the pandemic, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a lot of really good information, I think, that we can take into the conversations we're having this week as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the big white elephant in the room, Nina.
Don't look at the time.
Oh, no.
Later.
No, I know where to find you.
Oh, my goodness.
Why were the budget hearings kicked down the road twice, Nina?
Oh, goodness. Oh, you know, timing, schedule, you know, life. I mean, all my colleagues, you know, we all have full time. In all seriousness. Well, so again, for those who've been following well, they can see, right, that the big white elephant in the room, as you are saying, is the request for the pension obligation bond. I think you and I spoke about this really sort of on the surface earlier on, maybe like a month or two ago when it was first put in front of us, and we hadn't gone into the deliberations yet. We were talking a lot about the college and whatnot at the time. So just as a refresher, right, and I know you've had a lot of folks on to talk about it since then, but for the purpose of our conversation, right, so we have, you know, X amount of dollars, like every city and town across the nation, right? Not just here in the Commonwealth, but across the nation, there's a gap that we need to cover right now for a pension, right? Our liability for that, the gap, right? It's, I think, around $445 million. So every year we try to pay into that and close the gap down, right? But every year the gap builds because we have more folks retiring. We have folks who are living longer, luckily so, right? But, you know, the gap just seems to just never seem to close quickly enough, right?
Literally a catch 22, yeah.
100%, exactly that, right? And over time, though, we have less and less time to close it because I think we need to fund it by 2030, I forget the exact year, but in
2037 right now, at least it is.
Yeah. Not that long away. To me, if you say 2030 something, it's strange to me to think that that year exists, but it's only a decade away, right?
Thank
so. You know, we really need to think about creative ways to close that gap even quicker. And we are a handful of cities and towns that are exploring this really creative option to essentially bond out for that entire amount and then pay it off, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's a few thoughts behind that process. And I think, again, just the right now we're in a position where we need to find a creative solution, right? Not just we, but every city and town. Like, it's kind of like fend for yourself, find a creative solution. You gotta pay it down somehow, you know? Every year right now, when we look at the entire budget proposed for a fiscal year, there's a chunk of that proposal that says you gotta put some money away into this account to pay it down, right? We've been doing that and we keep trying and we're keeping, you know, to try to chip away at it. And the mayor and his team came up with a solution, which again, a handful of cities and towns were exploring, where because interest rates are so low right now to borrow, right? So folks who I'm sure have been refinancing their homes, refinancing their car loans, student loans, whatever it may be, the interest rates are so low right now, right? They're continuing to climb now on the other side of the pandemic, but they're still low, you know? The thought is, and because the city's credit rating is so great, we can bond for that liability. We'll pay it off with that bond and we'll take the money from that bond and start investing it, you know? And the investments right now, if we invested it, currently those investments for the retirement is being invested in something called Makita. And, you know, it's tucked away, it's earning returns, right? And hopefully those returns will help to, you know, fill in people's pensions when they retire. But if we take the $475 million that they're looking to bond, and we don't put it in Makita, but we invest it in PRIM instead, right? PRIM has a little bit more, I think, from what they proposed to us, security, I think, as far as interest rates go for a return. And so all around, it could work, right? It could be a really, I think, it's a really smart idea. I think it's really creative. You're essentially, again, taking a bond out, right? And you're going to fulfill this requirement where that gap is, and then you can start investing that 475 right away. You're not just investing bits and pieces of it, you know, along mm-hmm. the way to mm-hmm. earn something back. You're investing the whole 475, and obviously the return will be a lot greater as well, right? So all around, again, super creative solution, right, to trying to figure out how we pay down this massive, massive liability that we have. The other side to that piece, though, is that it's also a massive risk, right? Great. What's that saying is, you know, if you get the greater the risk, the greater the return, right? Mm-hmm. So ideally, the return here is going to be great and phenomenal and will help to solve this problem. You know, but the other side of it, and this is where my concern lies, is it's how big that risk is, right? We're not talking, you know, a couple $100,000 or, you know, some tens of thousands of dollars that you put. I mean, conservatively, I'm just financially conservative with my own money as well, right? Like I'm not one to take big risks in investment. And, you know, I'm much more a, let's put into a savings account that has a little bit of a lower return because I'm more confident in where that money sits rather than taking a big risk and putting it into like Bitcoin or something like that. You know what I mean? Like I personally am more conservative with those kinds of investments. And so I apply that to this conversation as well, right? Where at the end of the day, it's close to a $500 million investment we're talking about here. And ideally, we're going to make 6.8 to 7.25% return on $500 million. If we do, that's great. That's huge, right? If I can invest $500 million and somebody says to me, Nina, the least you're ever going to make back on that is at least 6.8%. That's great. Mm-hmm. But there's no guarantees in this life, right? There's mm-hmm. no guarantees in what's going to happen in the next 20, 30 years, which is how long we're bonding this out for. And if for whatever reason, those interest rates drop way below 6%, not even way below, but a couple of points below 6%, well, now we're not going to make the same returns that we thought we were going to. There's going to be a potential gap in now creating even a bigger gap in what we owe in liabilities. And we still have to pay back the bond, right? At a 2 or 3% interest rate. And so now you have to pay back the bond and you're losing money on this pension investment that you thought you were going to make money on. And this is over the course of a 20 to 30 year risk. You know, that's my lifetime we're talking about here, Joe, right? I just turned 33 this year. I mean, I can't imagine having to commit somebody for a lifetime of that kind of investment on top of other projects that are coming down the pike, right? Mm-hmm. There's other investments that we still need to make as a city that we're still on the line for, right? There are still fire stations that need to be, you know, cleaned up, that, you know, those projects are still in the pipeline. There are libraries that still need to be finished. You know, we still have this massive citywide, you know, street and sidewalk and infrastructure, you know, plan that needs to get done. We still have the seawalls that we need to make sure that we're maintaining, right? It's all the stormwater improvement that we're managing over the, like, it's the schools that we still need to go through. And like, there are so many additional financial responsibilities that we have on top of this, that for me personally, again, looking at that side of it, it just, I'm, because of how conservative I am when it comes to taking risks on financial management, I was deeply uncomfortable with it. I still, again, see both sides of it. And I think folks can agree to see that both sides have that valid point, right? If there's that risk for, you know, the unknowns of what's out there and taking such a large risk on such a large financial investment when there are other responsibilities that we do have financially. And then the other side of it is if it works, it's going to work really well, right? Mm-hmm. So it's ultimately, I think, you know, financially where we each stand, how we approach that kind of decision. And we, you know, made a decision on it and that does impact the budget. Right. So this is a very long answer to your question about why we had to move the budget.
Well, I think it's important to explain to people, you know, exactly your reason for voting no and exactly what the proposal is. I think it's important people understand it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it does impact the, so like I said, it does, you know, this is a long, long-winded answer to how it impacts the budget, but essentially, you know, like I had mentioned throughout my explanation, every year we have to pay into this liability one way or the other, you know, and if we were to move forward the way we had in the past, I think it was something around $30 million out of the budget we'd have to pay this year, right? So the total budget, we'd have to look at $30 million of that would be going into, you know, paying back or paying down this liability, right? Mm-hmm. If we move forward with the bond though, we're now instead not making that payment, we're actually just making a payment back to this bond we're taking out, mm-hmm. essentially this loan payment we're taking out, right? So it's the difference of, you know, am I paying am I paying again, like down to directly to this amount that I owe, or am I borrowing to take care of that? And now I'm paying back this loan that I borrowed, you know, and that obviously is a big price difference. So when we had the first conversation on the pension and it, on this obligation bond, right, and it wasn't voted on yet, that's when we bumped the first series of budget hearings, because we can't have a conversation about the budget when there's this big outstanding white elephant in the room, right, that impacts the bottom line of the budget. So we moved that to last week. Last week when we were in committee, the vote had failed. So then the budget had to be revisited for that bottom line. So that's why I got bumped to this week. The vote this week, yesterday, ended up passing. So we should be able to move forward this week in the budget conversations and hopefully vote on it, not vote on it, whatever it may be. But mm-hmm. we're coming down to a deadline, right? The fiscal year ends in June. So we're only about a week away from that. Right. So we'll see what happens this week. Yeah.
Do you think that the administration should have done it the other way, though, Nina? You know, ask for the bond obligation first. And then based on that, ask for the budget.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think it all is a matter of timing. You know, it all came in sort of at the same time. Not really, but the pension obligation bond request did come in first, right? Mm-hmm. Technically, if you look at the dates when things were introduced, that did come in first.
Okay.
It just so happened that the meetings, you know, just sort of came together at the same time, right? If you can think about it logistically, we had the pension obligation bond meeting in committee a few days before the budget, right? So technically we did have that conversation first. There just wasn't enough time to discuss it in between, I think, okay. You know, and it becomes difficult because to my earlier point, right, there's a lot of other things we're discussing on top of that. And there's a lot of other requests that come down the pike on top of this one, you know? And so, and then there's of course, you know, something that we all hold in high regard, it's constituent services on top of everything else, right? So there's a lot that happens in a very short period of time. And when it comes to having deliberations on such a big topic, you know, unfortunately, sometimes a 24-hour turnaround isn't enough time to do that. You know, we need three meetings to be able to discuss the bond. Well, that'll need to happen before we get to the budget. So even if the pension obligation bond request was submitted first, doesn't mean that we had enough time in between before the budget conversations. We are now. It's a little bit back to back, which
right.
The clerk's office and of course Jen Manning is doing a phenomenal job of managing that. But again, we are here. This is where it is. So we'll meet this week to talk about the budget and see what happens from there.
Right. So to your point, $475 million. The entire city budget is only what, $346 million. So
yeah. So it's a big. So we're going to take a little bit more than a couple of meetings to discuss it, which we did. You know, rightfully so. So again, that's how we operate, right? We're not going to quickly look at something like that and just move on from it. And I think just when it was introduced, we were already starting into budget season, you know, and so we had to find a way to balance both of those to get those meetings done before the end of this month.
Yeah. What's the $30 million difference, the $445 million, which is the obligation? Why was the $475 million bonded?
Yeah, that was one of the biggest concerns that I had that I was very... very confused about, because I was going through all the materials they gave us and the number that I kept seeing was 445, right? And so I had asked a couple of times. The way it was explained to me the second time around when I had asked about it was that, you know, depending on what the exact interest rate is that you get the bond for, it could be anywhere between 445 and 475. Oh. And that was their request, was they wanted some flexibility in those numbers as opposed to being, you know, exact down to the penny. And then if for whatever reason, the percentage rate is even off by 0.5%, right? They'd have to come back in front of the council to ask for that remaining amount. So for example, if they came back and they said, okay, well, the liability right now is 445, you know, we're rounding up a couple thousand, right?
Okay.
445 right now. And then they go out and they bond for it and they get an interest rate of, you know, they anticipated an interest rate of 2.8, but they come back and they say our interest rate is, you know, 3.1 or something, right? It's a very small difference, but now you need a little bit more money, right, to pay it. So they were looking at a $30 million gap to cover any differences in the rate at which they're going to go out and try to borrow this, you know, $445 million.
Okay.
But that also feeds to my concern a little bit too, right? And this is now sort of switching off from just talking about something versus like my opinion on something, right?
Yeah,
but, you know, that's, again, part of my concern, right, is they're requesting a $30 million gap. It doesn't mean they're going to take advantage of it, right?
Yep.
They approve a bond request does not mean they're going to go out and bond 475 today. They're just not going to do that, right? But the fact that they need that much of a gap, right? Like that much of a cushion, I guess you can say, it sort of feeds into my personal concern, right? Is like, if you're looking for a $30 million cushion because things can fluctuate that quickly between us approving the bond and you going out and getting it, that's a huge gap, right? And that's a decision that you have to think about. It's like, well, I can sit here and say to you, yes, today we think it's going to be 445, but you know, in a month from now when you bond it, oh, here's another 30 million that you need to fill the gap. I mean, so what's going to happen in the 30 years that we're doing this bond, right? So again, that's just a little bit of my digression to the personal concern I had about that. But
Okay, fair enough. What is your feeling about the controversy regarding Councillor Phelan's vote with this, Nina?
If I could be very candid and very frank with you, I think that at the end of the day, you know, each of us are here to do what we believe is best, right? And I by no means am a fan of assuming other people's intentions. Whether I agree or disagree with something, and as you can see, right, like there's been plenty of times where even the mayor and I have had significant disagreements on things, right? One thing that I don't stand for and I personally cannot tolerate is assumptions about other people's motives and intentions, right? I might not like you, Joe, and you might not like me, but if we're colleagues, you know, I can pick up the phone and I can talk to you about my concerns, and it's not my place to make assertions about your intentions, good or bad. I can sit here and say, you know what, Joe, I think your intentions are bad. Why are you asking me this, right? Mm-hmm. But that's not fair of me to assume intentions, you know? And I think I say that because I would never want somebody to assume my intentions about something. So, you know, the way I understand it when he explained it last night was that he, you know, wasn't part of the meetings insofar as like actively participating, but he was, you know, reactive and listening during the meetings. He sought an opinion about his participation. He received that opinion this past Friday. The following meeting happened to be this Monday, where the opinion allowed him, the legal opinion allowed him to participate. It's up to him to decide if he wants to, right? And that's up to him to figure out his intentions behind why he wants to participate. It's not up to me to assume nor project or claim what his assumptions are. If I'm uncomfortable with them, it's up to me to talk to him about it and say, this is why I think you participated. What's going on? Can you clarify? Because these are my assumptions right now and I need some clarity. Because at the end of the day, we all work together, right? There's 9 of us up there. If I need something to happen, I need 5 votes, you know? And I don't know. You know me, Joe, I come from a place of respect. Again, I think that I very much, to be candid, don't like when people assert assumptions about other people and their intentions. So, you know, I'll leave it at that.
Okay, fair enough. What is the plan moving forward now to get the budget approved?
So we have our hearings this Wednesday, God willing. We have our hearings this Wednesday and Thursday, chaired by Finance Committee Chair Dave McCarthy. And so we'll start on Wednesday at 5:30, and then we'll start on Thursday at 5:30 as well. And then we do still have to vote in our capacity as the regular council body to move the budget forward. And so the thought process is we'll hold a special city council meeting immediately following the budget hearings on Thursday to vote the budget through or to vote it down. Okay. So it'll be a very busy couple of days coming up.
Mm-hmm. And just to explain for folks, council can cut but cannot add, correct?
Correct. Yes. So we receive all the departments, they put together numbers to the mayor's office. Then the mayor proposes the budget to us in its entirety. We had the opportunity to talk to different department heads about what they're proposing in their budgets. And you're exactly right. We can't add to it, but we can cut it or we can approve it or we can make cuts and then approve that amended version. So for example, I mean, I know every year since I've been doing this, it's so funny, the police department, whenever I talk to Chief Keenan, there are moments where things happen, right? So sometimes overtime goes over and they need to pull from another line item, or you know, there's things like that where they have to move things, and he's really good at shifting things to make sure that if there's overages that it's covered and it works. But he always comes back with a really conservative budget, and we can't add to it, but every year I'm like, Chief, are you sure you don't need more? And he's like, no, you know, this is that one-off incident that happened that year, and that's why we needed it, but we're good moving forward, you know, and yeah. As much as we want to, we can't add to it, right? It's just, we can only approve, or we can cut and then approve. So, it'll be reflected again in the conversations that we have in the next 2 days too.
Sure. Okay. Very good. Anything else on your mind you want to talk about?
Not right now. I feel like though we have to find a time to definitely see each other before September. So we shall figure it out, Joe. It'll be good.
Absolutely. There's going to be plenty of in-person events, I think, over the summertime in the city for sure.
Yeah, I think it'll be good slowly coming back online with folks, you know.
Definitely. Thanks so much, Nina. Great to talk to you.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.